Welcome to the latest episode of the Escapism Podcast. I'm your host, Terrell. Thank you for taking the time to listen. If you do enjoy this episode, don't forget to follow this podcast on your respective platform and hit the notification button so you don't miss any future episodes. And if possible, can you please drop a 5-star rating on the podcast on that platform, because that will help me out a lot. Now let's get into today's episode. In today's episode, I want to talk about two films in particular: the newly released Zack Snyder film on Netflix, Rebel Moon Part 2, The Scargiver, and I want to touch on Civil War and give my thoughts on that film as well. I'm going to start by talking about Rebel Moon. Now, I will begin this by being very clear, and I think you'll be able to tell the direction I'm going to go with this based on what I'm about to say next. I want to make it very clear at the top of this that I am a fan of Zack Snyder and his work. And I'd say I enjoy the majority of his filmography more than the average person does. And there's a lot I appreciate within his work. I think he is a visionary filmmaker. I feel like he is not the last of a dying breed, but he is a type of filmmaker that we don't get enough of nowadays. And I think he's a director that has lasted and had a career that's flourished as long as it has because of the unique sensibilities that he brings to his films. And it's the type of thing that you go into his films looking for. Just wanted to make that very clear at the start. And like I said, you could probably guess why I'm making that clear right now. Let's quickly touch upon the first Rebel Moon film, because I didn't actually review that one. So that came out in December of last year on Netflix. And of course, Rebel Moon had been built up by Netflix and Zack Snyder to be essentially his version of Star Wars, because that's exactly what it was. This idea came from, it was the inception of this idea for Zack Snyder was actually a script that he had written for a Star Wars film, which Disney then rejected, and Netflix then gave him the money to create. So he basically stripped down all the references to Star Wars, all the elements to Star Wars that would create a lawsuit, and then he made it his own thing, and Netflix gave him the budget to then go and make that happen. There is a scenario that centers around this franchise, which is quite interesting, and I think to its detriment now that we've seen both films, or now that I've seen both films, and that's the fact that this film, in order to strike the deal with Netflix, they didn't want Zack Snyder to solely make the 3-hour R-rated versions of each film that he wanted to make. They agreed that they'll allow him to make those versions on the basis that he makes two prior versions that will get released to his films that are shorter. So these are the 2-hour versions, part one and part two, and that are PG-13 and not R-rated. So less violent, less sex and things like that involved, which is what Zack Snyder says is a part of this full version, which is an interesting strategy because it almost, and in hindsight, having seen both films now, it really feels like Netflix were artificially trying to create that Snyder cut, director's cut kind of hype that the Justice League had just through doing it this way. But I genuinely believe that it was a bad decision to do that because of what we're left with in terms of these first two versions of the films that we get. So let me just get into my thoughts on the first film. So part one came out in December, and I found it to be very disappointing. I went into it with a lot of optimism, being a fan of Zack Snyder and knowing that a lot of the things that sometimes people have an issue with his films, that I tend to enjoy or like not feel as much of an issue with. But with this film, I could definitely see it. And the first film, Child of Fire, was disappointing to me. I felt the plot was rather simple, yet it felt disjointed and underdeveloped at the same time. The world building wasn't as compelling as I expected either. It just, for a unique and original world from a mind like Zack Snyder, I expected more. And it felt quite derivative of other things like Star Wars without putting enough of its own spin on things. Star Wars, Seven Samurai, stuff like that, Magnificent Seven type thing, but didn't have enough of its own essence within it. And it's a very uneventful film until its last act as well. And I dare say a little boring. I was bored watching that first film. And I remember that first film ending, thinking to myself, okay, I'll watch the second part. I'm not that interested in watching it. I'm not intrigued or waiting on it, but I'll watch it. And I was mildly curious that maybe a director's cut, the director's cut that Zack Snyder is planning to make, which technically are the original versions of the films that he wanted to make, maybe that would fix this film to a certain degree by giving the characters more story and more depth. That's what I kind of thought from it. So that were my thoughts on the first one. This second one just came out this past weekend. I watched that one, and I don't know if it's worse, which is kind of a shock. I went into that second film, I put the bar really low. I haven't seen the first film and what that film was. I came into the second one thinking to myself, right, all I want from this film is action. That's all I wanted from it. I thought, I'm not gonna ask for anything else from this film. I'm gonna have no other expectation for anything else. Anything else this film gives me is gonna be a bonus. But all I'm coming to watch this for is some good Zack Snyder action. And if it can give me some good Zack Snyder action, then I'll be satisfied enough to kind of give it a pass, because this film was billed as the war movie. Zack Snyder kind of hyped this movie up as the first film is all the setup to get the characters together. The second movie is the battle, it's the war, it's the non-stop action. So that's what I went into this film with. So I thought that was quite fair of me to have that type of expectation. I didn't expect the world from this second film. I adjusted my expectations based on how disappointing the first one was. So it was a really low bar for this film to pass, to be something that I would deem kind of, passable or acceptable. Rebel Moon Part 2, The Scar Giver, failed to even reach that low bar that I set for it. This film was, in particular, the first hour of this film was a complete slog to get through. I said the first film was uneventful. The first hour in this second film is so uneventful that it felt like it was wasting my time. Like, it genuinely felt like it was wasting my time. And I got about 10, 15 minutes into this film, and in my head, I'm like, I had like, it's almost like, obviously not as serious as this, but it's almost like if you've experienced trauma, you have triggers where if you're in a certain situation that is even a little bit similar to that trauma, you'll get a trigger that's going to alert your body and your mind that, oh, we're back in that type of situation, and you're going to be hyper aware of it. Not to say that the first film gave me a traumatic reaction, because it didn't. But in a similar way to that, when watching this second installment, I got about 15 minutes in, and my head started thinking, oh, nothing's going on here. I'm bored. I'm not interested. And this really does feel like it's going to go down that exact same path of uninspired blandness that the first film had. So at that point, 15 minutes into this film, I contemplated switching it off. I was watching it on the day it released, Friday night, and I was like, you know what? It's Friday night. I've got a bit of free time to do something leisurely, whether it be play a video game, watch another film, watch a TV show. I'm watching this. I chose to watch this, and I'm 15 minutes in, and I'm already regretting my decision. I'm like, do I really want to waste the next hour and 45 minutes watching the rest of this when I already kind of have it in my head after this first 15 minutes that it is going to be what I feared it would be, which is following in the vein of that first movie in terms of its uneventful nature and how disappointing it felt. I continued, lo and behold, and one thing I'll say about this film is it got 30 minutes in. So 15 minutes, that was my thoughts 15 minutes into Rebel Moon Part 2, The Scar Giver. 30 minutes in, still nothing had happened yet. You can get 30 minutes deep into this film, and I'm not even exaggerating. Like, and I'm not even trying to be disrespectful either, because I really do admire, and I still admire Zack Snyder, and I'd still call him a filmmaker that I like. I enjoy his work for the most part. And I've championed a lot of his films that a lot of people haven't championed over the years, and I've championed them from release day. Like, I am a fan of his work, so it may for this review may feel like I'm dumping on him and his work a lot, but I'm just being completely honest. And to be honest, I think there's a bit more integrity to my reaction to this because I'm such a fan of Zack Snyder. But I'm gonna keep it 100 with you, and I'm gonna keep it direct and honest. 30 minutes into this film, nothing had happened, and I was like, what's going on here? I'm like, what is really going on here? Because there was just nothing in that first 30 minutes. No development of the characters, no development of the story, no kind of real actual setup to push this second installment forward. Nothing that felt like it was really building on what was set up in the first film. It was just completely stagnant. And I don't want to say it was overindulgent, because it didn't seem that way, because it wasn't really doing much in the first place. It just seemed so aimless with what it was doing in that runtime. And it And it's rare that I watch a film, especially a film of this nature, and especially when you go into it as well, knowing to not to expect much and still feel like you're having your time wasted. And that's what this film really felt like. And by 30 minutes into this film, what you're essentially looking at is people harvesting wheat in slow motion. That's one of the key scenes that's going on. And I know a lot of people tend to mock Zack Snyder for his slow motion sequences. I'm usually a fan of it, and I usually don't think it's like overdone. In this film, you have like a 10-minute sequence involving slow motion of people harvesting wheat. And at that point, I was, 30 minutes into this film, nothing had happened, and I'm watching people harvest wheat in slow motion. And I'm just thinking to myself, how did we get here? And come on, Zach, like, you're better than this. Like, what is going on? And I was kind of baffled. I'm not gonna lie, I was baffled by it. And as I said, there's no by that point, 30 minutes in, there was no development of the characters or the story. And there was no, even during this wheat sequence as well, it's not just the fact that the characters were harvesting wheat in slow motion and it was taking ages and it was almost like a montage that was dragging out. It's the fact that there was no development or meaningful dialogue or explorations of anything going on amongst it. If the characters were harvesting wheat, but we were getting some very important information about the characters or some important characterization during that time, it would still be dull. It would still make me think, why are we watching wheat in slow motion for 10 minutes? But at least I could be like, right, okay, there is something to focus on other than that. So it's slowing down the pace of the film to deliver this information. So you can focus on that. But it wasn't doing that. So I was quite baffled in that regard as well. The structure of this story is a mess. And I think that was an issue I had with the first one as well. And it's because after those long periods of no development, you get a sequence that I think is another 10, 15-minute sequence of essentially every character sitting around like a campfire telling their reason for why they want to join this battle against and overthrow this kind of this empire, if you will. I can't remember the name, but it's basically like the Empire from Star Wars. Why they want to overthrow them. And then you get these little montage flashback clips of the stories they're telling. And you get the narration over those moments with them as well. And there's nothing inherently wrong about that style of storytelling, but it's got to be very well executed to be worthwhile because it's so easy for that type of storytelling to feel completely expository, completely ham-fisted. And that's exactly what it felt like in this film. It's like you just blown 30 minutes in the runtime to get to this point. And you didn't use any of that time to develop these characters when you could have. And now, because you've wasted that time, you're now putting all the characters in a very arbitrary situation where they're all sat around each other, just telling stories, and you're just flashing the images on screen to give us the backstory, which you could have presented in a more interesting and dynamic way throughout the first half an hour of this film. So it was quite redundant, that sequence. And once again, as I was watching the film, I'm like, oh my God, I'm like, Zach, come on. I'm like, I know, I've seen Zack Snyder do better than this. Like, and you'd think, given the blank canvas that is your own imagination and your own creation and your own world, that it would be ripe with a lot of inspiration and a lot of compelling elements, and especially from a mind and a visionary like Zack Snyder. That's exactly what I expect from it. And it was quite shocking that the film just lacked that in abundance from a mind like Zack Snyder. And it's just not an engaging way to tell a narrative of this nature. And it really harmed the film. And like I said, the first hour is a slog to get through. And this film was billed as the action movie, as the war movie. That's what it was billed as. And for the first hour, absolutely nothing happens. So by that point, an hour in, I already knew no matter what happens in this following hour, the film's failed my test of crossing that low bar. I said it because it's not going to deliver the consistent action that I expected and that I was told was going to be in it, because the first hour is completely uneventful. And because there was no meaningful development within that first hour, there's just nothing to save it in my eyes in terms of holding up to whatever the second hour could be. The second hour could have been incredible. And this film still would have been severely harmed by that lackluster first hour. Because I'm not exaggerating when I say it's probably one of the most empty first hours of a film that I've seen in quite some time. Like, I got absolutely nothing out of it. And I don't want to sound like I'm ranting, but I'm just being completely honest. I've said it multiple times. I was just baffled by it, to be completely honest. And once again, something that I find very like strange is that he's given us over 4 hours across these two films now in this world that he's created, which is supposed to be a space opera epic like Star Wars, but his version. And we haven't really gone anywhere. You go to a few different planets in the first movie, but it's all for like one scene just to get the just to recruit the member of the team, and then they move on. And in this film, it's primarily takes place on one planet, which is very bland, one location, and then the other scenes are just on the Dreadnought ship. So it's not very creative or stimulating as a fantasy epic, which once again is just quite strange to me, because I'd expect of all filmmakers, Zack Snyder, even if he doesn't get the story right, I would expect Zack Snyder to get the world building and the intrigue and the creative elements of this world. I would expect at the very least him to get that right and make that compelling and interesting, but it just doesn't work for me. It really didn't work for me. And another thing about this film, I stand by my words that I've long said that Zack Snyder is one of the best visionary filmmakers of his time, and he's an asset to the filmmaking medium that I don't take for granted, but I think a lot of other people do, and I think he's influenced the filmmaking medium in a big way since 300. You know, and he started with Dawn of the Dead, but when he came in through with 300, the visual style he brought to that graphic novel adaptation, and then he kind of channeled that through into Watchmen as well. Very influential at a time where comic book films and graphic novel adaptations were still quite uncommon. They weren't, you know, as popular as they are today back then. So he really did help pioneer that, because you think 300 came out before it came out before Spider-Man 3. It came out before The Dark Knight. You know, it came out before the MCU was established. So that was ahead of his time. And then even Watchmen came out before most of the MCU had been established, and you know, before a lot of the other these films. So these films, he really did have a hand in pioneering that genre for what it was, both visually and in terms of the type of content you could put on screen. Like something like Watchmen is way ahead of his time to be a film adaptation. So I would always give credit to Zack Snyder for that. But that makes it all the more baffling that he's fallen so hard here. But given all of that, what I say about Zack Snyder and all the praise I give to him, I don't know what happened here, but this film is quite visually repugnant at times. And some of the shots are so out of focus and hazy that it's just ugly to look at. And it's not a case of bad visual effects, because the visual effects themselves, the visual effects, for the most part, are good. It's not a case of bad visual effects. But I think the real issue here is the cinematography. Now, starting with Army of the Dead a couple years ago, Zack Snyder decided to put himself in the position of a cinematographer. So he's actually juggling a lot of, he's doing a lot of heavy lifting on these films. He's directing, he's writing, he's the cinematographer. And to be completely honest, as much as I love Zack Snyder, I don't think the role of cinematographer should be going to him. I think he should delegate that position to someone that he can collaborate with, because I feel like his collaborators and people he's worked with in the past in regard to DPs, they do a better job of translating the vision in his mind to the screen in a very satisfying and appealing way. I think of Larry Fong as an example with what he did on Batman vs Superman. How visually stimulating that film was as a comic book film, and how it felt like a comic book come to life with its imagery. He needs, and I think Larry Fong worked on Sucker Punch as well, I believe, and a few other of Zack's films. And I think he needs that seasoned, experienced cinematographer to translate the images in his mind to screen, because I don't think Zack is capable of doing it on his own. Because his selection of shots, his selection of lighting at times, the way he frames it, you know, the aperture and the focus, it's all a bit jumbled in these films, to the point where you might get one shot that looks fantastic, and then the next scene will just look completely ugly, and a lot of the frame is blurred out and all hazy, and the lighting's a bit weird. It's a very strange It's a very strange thing that I noticed with this film, but I really noticed it with this second one, probably more than the first one, because there's such a lack of variation of location. You're in this one kind of bland, grey-looking planet most of the time, and then half of the shots they've just got a swirl of like a bokeh effect and out of focus. It's just very strange. But I do think he really needs to delegate the position of a cinematographer to someone else, because he can't do it at the level of his peers. And I think the end product is better when he collaborates with cinematographers who can assist with bringing his vision to life. The second hour. So what's the second hour of this film like? The second hour is more action centric. It's when the battle kind of starts and it's going down, and I'll give it credit. You know, there's some action beats within this film that are quite entertaining, or at least well staged. But I think what this film is an example of is it's an example of how if you don't give your audience something to be invested in with the story and its characters, then anything else fails as a result, no matter how much cool things you throw on screen. Now, usually that doesn't always happen with me. There's films that I've watched where I'm not connected to the characters of the story, but I can appreciate the great action. Some of the Transformers movies, for example. But with this film, I really felt it, where there was stuff going on, there's dramatic beats within the action, and I'm like, I'm so disengaged, like I'm passively watching this action, kind of engaged through it. But then anytime they slow it down for a dramatic beat or someone gets killed, it's like I'm not that invested to care. And to be honest, there's a few deaths in this film, and there were a few times where characters died in this film. It's very dramatic. You're very clearly supposed to feel a get a very strong emotional response by it. And I'm looking at the person who's dying like, I don't remember who you are. Am I supposed to know who you are? Wait, what's your importance to this story again? Like, it's that type of thing, and that goes back to the failure of the storytelling and the character work in these two films that we've gotten, and that's the result of it, which is a real shame. But that is how I feel about this film. There, like I said, there were a few action beats that I thought worked really well. There were other beats where I was like, "What's going?" Like, for example, the robot character that was in the first film. He had a little bit of development in the first film, and then he was not in the rest of it. And I thought, okay, they're building that up for the second film. And everyone was saying they're building that up for the second film. Second film, you're going to see him. It's going to be this, this, this. I'm like, okay, cool. I'll give it a pass for how he was treated in the first film, because this second film, we're really going to get into it. We're going to see a lot more of him and blah, blah, blah. This battle's going on for ages in this film. And then all of a sudden, he appears for like one fight sequence, which wasn't even that cool in my opinion. I've seen a lot of people really praise it on Twitter, like some of the fans, and I don't even think it was that great of a sequence with him. And then he like takes a back seat again, and I'm like, is that it? Like, you did all this build up in the first film to get to the second film for him to jump in just to do that and then back off again? Like, for real? Like, there are a lot of elements like that. The best part of this film is literally the final action sequence aboard the Dreadnought. What goes on down there? There's a fight sequence whilst the ship is like tilting and the characters are falling, and they're using those like laser swords, which are a very cool looking weapon, although they look like lightsabers. Very cool looking weapon. That's a great sequence. That felt like a real Zack Snyder sequence. You know, that's what I was expecting the rest of this film to be like, more exhilarating, more creative with its direction, more just bold. And that was a great sequence. That's probably the best sequence in the whole two films, that final battle sequence. But it came far too late for me to really care about it, which was a shame. And I think that's going to be my statement when it comes to this franchise in general. By the time these director's cuts come out, which I think is later on this year, it's going to be too late for me to care, I think. I'll probably, out of sheer curiosity, maybe check out the part one director's cut, maybe see what he's done there out of curiosity. But I don't know if those versions can save it. It'll be quite remarkable if those versions can add so much to it. And to be fair, it is like an extra hour that he's talking about per film. If it can add so much depth to it that it can fix all like a majority of the issues I have with these films. But I just don't think the framework of the story he's telling here is that interesting to begin with. So I don't think no matter what extras he adds to it, I don't think I'm going to be that engaged with it anyway. And one other thing I want to note about this Rebel Moon film. So these films have forever been advertised as like a two-parter. So Rebel Moon Part 1 and Part 2. Rebel Moon isn't a two-part story, and that's what it's been advertised as. It's an incomplete trilogy. There is no narrative conclusion in part one or part two. Part two just ends with an unfinished story leading into a third film that isn't even guaranteed. Not that I would want it, but it's not guaranteed. So Zack Snyder's essentially made two films here with no ending, which once again further plays in, I feel like a broken record, further plays into the fact that these films, they're lacking in development and actual proper storytelling. But that's my thoughts. The Rebel Moon Part 2, The Scargiver, doesn't improve upon the lackluster first installment. If you didn't enjoy the first installment, you probably won't enjoy this one. In my opinion, both Rebel Moon films comfortably sit at the bottom of Zack Snyder's filmography, and I believe the faster he moves on from this universe, the better for both him and his audience and his fans. If you enjoy these films, more power to you. I'm not trying to, make a statement on people that I like it. If you like it, that's great. Everyone's entitled to their opinion. I really didn't. And I wanted to. I really did want to, but I really didn't. And I found these films very disappointing. But that's my thoughts on Rebel Moon Part 2, The Scargiver. Let's take a swift turn onto Civil War, which came out a couple weeks ago now. Saw that a couple weeks ago. And that film is essentially, I'll read the synopsis for Civil War very quickly. It's directed by Alex Garland. And it's set in the near future where a group of war journalists attempt to survive whilst reporting the truth as the United States stands on the brink of a civil war. Now, this film really takes the perspective of the journalists, which I found quite interesting. And it's an interesting discussion piece, this Civil War film. So, how I would describe it is Civil War is like a series of intense vignettes that paint a picture of war from a journalist's perspective, as they go to great lengths in order to capture the truth. Now, the direction and the cinematography captures the film in a manner that feels authentic, with like a level of realism that makes it feel like documentary footage. And I think that's one of the strongest assets of this film is the way it actually looks. It looks very realistic. It puts you really in the environment, and you can really feel what you're seeing through the screen. The locations themselves sometimes tell a story of their own with the detail that's packed into them, and I like that as well. There's like an element of storytelling just through the locations and the details throughout that, and I always like when a film can do that. The subtlety and sometimes lack of score throughout some of the film's most intense sequences is really effective. The film relies on a mixture of silence and then juxtaposing that with the deafening sound of rapid gunfire, explosions, and soldiers yelling out commands. And it really helps immerse you into that environment and make you feel like you're right in the center of this conflict that's going on. The sound design is tremendous and helps immerse you within each moment. And I would say, like, I'm a big audio head. So when music in general, but also in films, when it comes to sound design, audio mix, I'm always paying attention to that. And the sound design in this film was actually incredible. I really did like that. The sound of gunfire, like I said prior, is deafening. It's really like threatening. And it's one of those films where you get every now and again, you get those films where whenever you hear gunfire, it's startling. Like if there's one moment, I mean, there's a few moments in this film like this, but if there's a moment where you've got a character that suddenly gets shot or a bullet fire, gunfire suddenly goes off unexpectedly, it's like a jump scare with the way that it startles you. And for a film of this nature that's trying to paint a portrait of a divided America, I think it really does a good job at putting you on edge with its sound design. So I think the sound team for this film deserve a lot of praise. There were a couple needle drops throughout this film that didn't work for me. So moments where transitioning through scenes, you'd get music playing against the backdrop of this like horrific war imagery. And I just felt like it was a jarring mix with the imagery and some of the song choices they made. But this film, one thing I forgot to mention is this film is essentially a road trip film. It's a road trip war film, where we're going on a road trip with a bunch of journalists as they're traveling through the heart of America during a civil war. And that's where I say it feels like vignettes, because you're like, as they travel from location to location, it's almost like you get a little short film in each location. And then it's bookended by them traveling to the next location. The performances in this film were good across the board, I believe. And although the character development itself isn't that detailed, and for some key characters, the development feels completely absent, but the cast do a great job of feeling like real humans. So you've got Kirsten Dunst in this film. She's the main lead of this film. You also have Wagner Moura and Kaylee Spaney, and then Stephen McKinley Henderson. And they all do a great job of adding a level of humanity to their roles, which I thought was, once again, quite impactful for a film of this nature, and definitely a credit to this film. They're portraying people who are becoming desensitized to the violence that surrounds them as they attempt to capture the best images of the horror that is their reality. And I will say, Kaylee Spaney left a strong impression on me as an inspiring war photographer and journalist. And she is actually starring in Alien Romulus, which is coming out later this year. And seeing her in this actually made me even more excited for that Alien movie that Fede Alvarez is making. I have high hopes for that. I was a big fan of the Alien franchise. And yeah, I think she left the biggest impression on me out of the cast in this film. Kirsten Dunst gives a well-rounded performance that displays the complexity of all that she's experienced. And Jesse Plemons, who is actually the husband of Kirsten Dunst, he is a standout in what is arguably the film's best sequence. He probably the standout performer in the entire film, just with that one scene. And a fun fact is that he wasn't actually the original choice for that scene. The actor that they had cast for it had to drop out on short notice, and Kirsten Dunst said to Alex Garland that she'll ask Jesse about it because he will probably do it as a favor, and he did do it. And Jesse Plemons is just such a great actor that he you would think that role was written for him the way he performed it. It was a really, really tense sequence, and I'll be shocked if it gets to the end of this year and you don't see that sequence on a bunch of people's lists for like best scenes of the year. It really was a really shocking and intense and harrowing sequence, and in my opinion, the standout scene of the film. Civil War, then this is the thing. There's a lot I like about Civil War, but this is the big thing that I think Civil War falls apart on, and this is the most controversial aspect of this film, which has driven up a lot of discourse online, and it's very interesting to see people's differing responses for it. But Civil War lacks substance and thematic depth, which, in my opinion, is something that a film like this needs. And this is the biggest flaw, in my opinion. Its stories, themes, and message feels a little hollow as a result of this, because it makes it feel somewhat surface level. Because a lot of the politics of this film's reality isn't made clear. Like, I can potentially understand the intent of why they did that, because they want you to focus on the journalists in the heart of it. And sometimes the journalists don't have a side. They're just literally trying to document what is going on and just presenting the images. So I can kind of understand the intention behind it, but the neutral perspective this film takes is an issue. And I don't think the issue is that the film doesn't choose a stance politically, because I've seen people discuss that as well. They're like, oh, it's apolitical. It's not choosing either side. I think people were expecting the film to pick a side and then have to contend with the other side feeling offended by the fact that this film is almost painting one side in a good light and one side in a bad light. But the film doesn't do that. And I don't think that is the issue, the fact that it doesn't choose a stance politically. I think the problem is it doesn't give enough context to what's going on in general. So my understanding of the bigger picture was missing, which lessened the impact of the whole film thematically. This is a film called Civil War. It's presenting a near future where America is in a civil war. There's this huge conflict. The president's in a particular position. You've got states like Texas and California, I think it is, that have combined and they're now kind of civil with each other and they're fighting against. And it's like all these crazy things. And I'm like, okay, this is intriguing. What statement are you trying to make here? But because the film doesn't actually give you any true backstory, clear-cut backstory to what's going on, it's like, okay, I can't actually form a conclusive opinion on what you're presenting because I don't have the backstory. I will just be playing a guessing game, just trying to guess what's going on and what's led to this in this world. And in some films, that's a great thing, like having that thought-provoking nature to make you go away and think about what's going on in the film. But in this case, I think, no, I need a bit of context as a jumping-off point to then fuel my thoughts for the rest of it. And this film didn't provide that. And I think that is the biggest flaw that this film has. That choice anyway that they make with this film will elicit a divisive response from the audience, and it has done, and it's continued to be interesting to explore how different people view the film, but perfectly Personally, I felt it left a lot to be desired in that area, and it had an abrupt and unsatisfying conclusion as well. Like you get to the apex of what they're trying to do in this film. You get to the peak, and then the film just ends, and it's like, oh, it's like, okay, I guess that's what it is. But I will remember Civil War for its pulse-pounding sequences that connect the threads on this road trip war movie. The thunderous sound design, the hyper-realistic imagery, that will linger in my mind. It made me think about all the journalists and the press that have been killed in Gaza recently whilst trying to present the truth to the world. I think it's a very unique perspective to tell a war story, and that's one that I don't think, based on the four films that I'm aware of, has really existed in this way before, and I gotta give it credit for that. And yeah, telling the story from the POV of a journalist is unique and smart. It's just a shame that greater context wasn't given to the overall war that is taking place around these characters. And I do think, I haven't seen this film in a long time, but I don't think Civil War can sit in the upper echelon of films of this nature, like a Zero Dark Thirty, for example. But those are my thoughts on Civil War. And yeah, it's been an interesting month for films this month. But yeah, that's my thoughts on Rebel Moon Part 2, The Scargiver. And my thoughts on Civil War from Alex Garland. Thank you very much for listening to this episode once again. If you enjoyed this episode, don't forget to follow this podcast on your platform of choice, whether it's Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else that you're listening on. Make sure to follow the podcast and hit the notification button so you don't miss any future episodes. Please share this episode with your friends if they're into film, or if you want to, share an opinion about these films with them. And then once again, if you did enjoy this episode, please help me out by dropping a 5-star rating on the podcast on your platform of choice, because that will help push me into the algorithms, help boost the podcast up, and it will allow me to spread my wings and do more on this podcast. But once again, thank you for listening, and I'll speak to you guys in the next episode.